Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Football Garbage Time NFL Podcast. My name is Susan Wong, and I'm the editor-in-chief of Football Garbage Time. And with me is my co-host and writer for Pro Football Focus and Fantasy Pros, Ryan Whitfield. Welcome back, Ryan. You are so underwater nowadays, I almost feel like I should call you a special guest. How you doing?
Hokun, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Ryan.
All right. As I was
apparently
on
wow. Woo! For a minute there, I wasn't sure if I was
gonna,
me or you.
I was going to joke when I came on. Yeah, I was going to say, getting on here, or getting me on the show, must be like a trip to the dentist at this point. So,
Well, thank goodness, because I was like, you know, I can never tell if it's a problem on your end or my end, so this is just like fantastic. When you chimed in and you're like, can you hear me? I'm like, oh crap, here we are again. Typical that we're going to have technical difficulties right at the beginning. Anyway, hey man, welcome back. Like I said, before the technical issues, you've been so underwater nowadays. I almost feel like you're our special guest. But you know, welcome back, man. It's awesome having you back on the show here.
Yeah, good to be on the air. So
yeah,
like I said, I've about 12 hours a day these days, so living the dream, but happy to be on.
12 hours a day, dang, dude. And I know that you're all in on the Bruins right now, because I know you're a huge Bruins fan, and you're constantly tweeting about it, so I assume that's a big chunk of your free time. And I see that they're just edging out the Lightning in the Atlantic Division, so I got to ask you, what do you think their chances are of taking that Atlantic Division?
Well, I mean, you have to assume that Tampa Bay is going to come back down to earth a little bit. It was a fantastic
crazy
stat
right now.
The month of February, the Bruins are over like their last, I don't know what it was. It was something like last 17 games. The Bruins are 13-2-2. In that time, they've given up 5 points in the standings to Tampa.
Right.
So you go 13-2-2, and you're losing standings. So you have to, as good as Tampa is, you have to assume that they're going to find water a little bit. There is two matchups between the two down the stretch. I'll actually be at the one on March 7th in Boston,
nice.
So that'll be
Great.
Pretty playoff atmosphere in the building that night. So that'll be good. But I think it's really going to come down to the Bruins to move or not here at the deadline. If they add Kreider,
right.
If they're able to add Johnson from Columbus, who I want them to most go after,
right.
If they're able to add Paul Mary from New Jersey, then they'll have a fighting shot. But they're gonna add to the team if they're gonna have a chance to hold on to that division.
Well, Kreider is gonna be an interesting one, because I was just actually watching a little bit of commentary on that, because I'm watching a game that matters to no one, Rangers Blackhawks, because both teams are basically out of it. But that being said, you know, Kreider going someplace, wherever he ends up, will be really interesting. They're talking about all the potential options for him and what they're asking for. They're looking like they're asking for a first-round pick and a lot there. So it'll be interesting to see where he ends up. Hey, with all this Bruins stuff and working 12 hours a day, did you manage to squeeze in some XFL this weekend?
Oh, God, no. I told you.
No?
I have no interest in that crap league. And I know you're all having fun. I do. I mean, my extent of watching it is whatever pops up on Twitter. And I'll admit that I love the fact that, you know, when somebody fumbles the ball, they go and stick a microphone right in
I
their
love
face
that.
On the
love
sideline.
It.
Super engaging.
You just fumbled the game away. How do you feel?
It's just fantastic. Wish somebody had been there to do that to Adrian Peterson in that NFC
yes.
divisional round game years ago against
they should
the,
do this in
the
NFL.
But yeah, so I mean, there's some enjoyable elements of that. But what it comes down to at the end of the day is, you know, for me too, it's really twofold. It's one, it's not the premier players at their peak. It's the next
sure.
step down. I equate it to unfairly probably a little bit. But you know, if you put Double A baseball on, I probably wouldn't watch that either.
Right.
Yeah, the other thing for me is I hit football fatigue, and I love talking off-season stuff because that's a little bit more
right.
business-minded.
Yeah.
I love the off-season for that sense. But
yeah,
as far
too.
As watching football, with all the work I do in the sport now, come the end of the Super Bowl, I'm like, all right, I could
get burnt.
I could take my Sundays back a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so vested in it during the season. So,
hey, I'll say,
watching hockey. You guys enjoy the XFL.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got a team that you can care about that's actually going somewhere. So that makes sense to me, right? I don't got that. But hey, that being said, though,
that's not true.
The XFL. It's not watching the XFL for the football, though. It's more like watching them. It's almost like an extended combine. You know what I mean? You get a chance to kind of see some of those. I mean, for most of the players. I mean, not all of them. Some of them are kind of – they're never going to make their way to the NFL. But there's a couple guys out there. You know, I'm a real fan, as you probably saw. I mentioned this last week, and I've tweeted about it a number of times. I really like what I'm seeing over there at P.J. Walker. You know, and you might recall him from way back in 2015 when he helmed the Temple team that played against Notre Dame in Philly. Both teams were ranked. They were ranked 21st. He was actually really, really good. He set all sorts of school records in Temple. And he looked like he was ready to take the next step. He never really did. He's kind of doing that in the XFL. I think that we might find our first, you know, skill position player to make the leap. Of course, I said this for Rashad Ross, and it unfortunately didn't happen for him last year.
I was going to say Rashad Ross was the same guy in the AAF for you, and then you were tweeting the other day about how he's not in the XFL. So
he's starting XFL, though.
That's a knock on you. It's just, I just think it looks, you know, it's about the competition, too, because, you know, you could say in college that, you know, that a lot of college guys, I mean, first of all, it's not the top tier talent because no college team could be an NFL team, but it is the top of their age group, and they got to prove it against other, you know, high-end players that are going to make the pros. And I just look at this league, and even the guys who look really, really good, I have to, you know, you have to remind yourself that they're not playing high-end defensive guys.
Well,
there's
it's like a preseason game. It's
of course,
like a sports preseason
there's some
game.
Little white receiver, I forget his name,
that
everyone was raving. No, it wasn't Prohl. It was somebody else. It was
Nelson Spruce?
Of course, in New England.
New England in NFL.
Either way. In the XFL, he made some one-handed – diving back catch in week one, and tons of people in New England were like, oh, it's the next, you know, Danny Amendola, it's the next Julian Edelman.
That was Prohl. That was totally Prohl. Yeah, they were talking about how he's going to be the next Danny Amendola type, and obviously he went.
But either way, who's he doing it against? Like, spare me on that. It's the XFL. Yeah, that's not true.
I do like Austin Prohl because his dad is Ricky Prohl, the, you know, legend wide receiver from Rams, Bears, lots of other places. But that being said, you're right. It's hard to make that leap.
You forgot another big one. He also played he played in Carolina, and the reason I know that is because he lost to the Patriots in both Super Bowl 36 and 38. He was a Ram on the Pats.
Oh, that's right.
The first Super
Bowl. Oh, you're talking about Ricky.
And he was
a
Panther
yeah.
in the second one, and he had fourth quarter touchdowns in both games, actually.
Yep.
So he was a thorn in that team's side, but.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good call. Good call there. And actually, and Austin Prohl played in UNC with Mitch Trubisky. So there's another reason why I probably shouldn't like him, since Mitch Trubisky basically sunk my team. You know,
that's not as fun of a connection.
No, that is not a fun fact. Hey, I'll tell you one interesting fun fact I learned about PJ Walker, though. Since I'm on my PJ Walker binge or man crush going on right now, I have to say that you know, he actually got his job in XFL. Because he was actually cut from the Colts right before the regular season started, and he had and Andrew Luck really thought he was had some potential, and gave a recommendation to the XFL that they pick him up. And I didn't realize this, but you know, his dad Oliver Luck is the commissioner of the XFL. Well, I had no idea that was a connection there. But there you go, a little trivia, a little XFL trivia for all you guys. That's good stuff, right? Aren't you guys all glad you tuned in? All right. Well, anyway. We got NFL stuff to talk about. We got lots of things to talk about. We're talking about the top offensive free agents that are likely to be available and the top offensive prospects in the 2020 NFL draft. Boy, there's so much to talk about. Let's get rolling. All right, hot breaking news. Before we jump into that, I just want to mention this one thing. And it's it may not be done, but it may. There is recent discussion that with the CBA and NFL – in the newest agreement, there will be an extension to 7 playoff teams per conference. 7 playoff teams per conference. Only the one seed would then get the bye. This would take effect this season, 2020 season. So that means 14 teams into the playoffs. That means there'll be 6 total wild card games in that first week. And that also means that the one team that gets a bye at the one seed will be paid that week, because right now the teams that are on a bye do not get paid on that week that they get a bye. So Thoughts? I mean, it is not. It hasn't been done yet. They say it actually might be done within a week or so. But what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is an idea that everyone needs to go ahead and just get used to. I think it is going to pass right now, but I think eventually, if it doesn't now, it eventually will pass.
Right.
And I think it's just the first step in lengthening out the playoffs by a week. Obviously, they're not going to lengthen it out right now, but it's just you're expanding the pool there.
Yep.
I think this is laying groundwork for eventually an additional playoff week, and then additionally adding a week to the regular season and a bye week. I think the NFL, and probably smartly so, would really like to see to expand their calendar to President's Day weekend. Is it President's Day?
February.
Yeah, because they don't want to lose Saturday's build-up and then all day Sunday's build-up into the Super Bowl. So you don't want to move the Super Bowl to a Saturday. But moving into that weekend, a lot of us have Monday off, which then creates the ability to obviously go out and just be a bigger, even, you know, cultural event.
Right.
Basically making it a holiday, right? It's on a holiday weekend. And
they
used to do this when I was much younger, and I'd have to look at the reasons they did, but I wouldn't be surprised if they want to lengthen it up the other way and kick it off. You know, to me, it feels like such a crime that the NCAA kicks off on Labor Day weekend and we miss out on the NFL, because I think that's, just again, just a nice, perfect holiday. And that gives you a holiday-to-holiday schedule, long weekends where they can just really fill you with football on both sides. And so I wouldn't be surprised if they do that. Now, in terms of what it means for the league, I mean, I get pushback right away that there are already people are frustrated that you a lot of times see, you know, the six-team format. Where you know, a 9-7 team, 8-8 team slips in, and I don't understand why that offends people's sensibilities so much. For Christ, you people watch the XFL, so I think you guys don't have a huge intolerance to bad football. So I think you know, so on that front, I'm fine with it. I mean, and what it does, which I think is awesome, is that there's no more coasting for that 2 seed. You know, it's 1 seed or bust. You're either getting that bye and the whole advantage.
Or
you could be playing on opening weekend, which I think is a great wrinkle, a lot more drama. And imagine,
I love it.
You know, Kansas City's the 2 seed last year, right? And they got the bye, and they make a run to the Super Bowl. Imagine if they had to play opening day of the playoffs, and they get bumped off by, you know, obviously it would be the 7 seed, so it's not somebody they should lose to. But it's just that idea of not getting that break, and now to make the 1 seed more valuable. I'm all for adding more drama into sports. I'm one of the rare people that likes the one-game wild card play-in in the MLB. I think it's one of the best nights of the year in baseball.
It's exciting.
So I don't see why I wouldn't love this
in football.
It's tough
for baseball, though. You look at the variability game to game. But I do think it's probably the most exciting playoff game, aside from a Game 7, clearly, because, you know, it's go big or go
home
right there.
It's a manufactured Game 7.
Absolutely.
In a sport where it's already any given Sunday, just gives us, you know, gives us more on that. And, you know, I think I personally feel – that the playoffs would be better. I mean, I know you'd probably only be the first round and have to look how the scheduling will shake out, but something amazing about a 1 o'clock, 4 o'clock, and 8 o'clock game on Saturday, and then a 1 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 8 o'clock game on Sunday of the first week of the playoffs.
I would love that. Yeah, that would be great.
That's going to be a fun weekend. And if you're not looking forward to that weekend, then you're not somebody I want to hang out with. So.
Yeah. Fair point. I'm all in on that. Absolutely. More playoff football I'm all in on that. You know, and I love playoff football because my team never makes it anywhere. So clearly I love playoff football just for the sake of playoff football. So, let's move along here. You had one more team, we still wouldn't have made it, but that's okay. Anyway, let's get on with our actual topics, our free agency and the NFL draft that's coming up. Let's start with free agency. As I mentioned last week, free agency is getting real close. We're already seeing teams take some action to ensure that they're not going to get into a bidding war. Teams can begin to use franchise or transition tags as of February 25th. That's just around the corner. Free agent negotiations can start on March 16th. Prior to free agency officially opening on March 18th, we've already seen a number of moves proactively. You know, Drew Brees kind of told us all on Instagram that he's going back to New Orleans for one more shot. That should be interesting. Greg Olsen was released by the Panthers, now has been signed by the Seattle Seahawks. So he's also off the board. So let's just stick to unrestricted free agents available in 2020. Ryan, which offensive UFAs are you most interested in this free agency period? And what are your thoughts about where they might land?
I mean, I think, I mean, not to, to cop out here, but I think the obvious answer here is, and it's gotten a little less exciting with Drew Brees news, but it's the
right.
Yeah, it's the quarterback carousel. You know, it's,
sure.
It's you don't see quarterbacks get to free agency, and I know that none of them are perfect prospects. You know, we're certainly not seeing, Patrick Mahomes reach free agency, right? That's something that just won't happen. But you have some of the changing guards of the old two with Brady and Philip
yeah.
Rivers,
mm-hmm.
and then on the other side you have guys like Teddy Bridgewater.
I like him.
You know, Jameis Winston, you know, on the younger side. So it's, you know, who are interesting prospects at the quarterback position. So, you know, the only time I've ever remember it being interesting at the quarterback position was the Peyton Manning offseason. So you don't really get that in free agency. It's very similar. Almost there's a real NBA free agency feel about this year. So I think that's going to be super exciting. And then one I'd even forgotten about, and I think it was Derrick Henry the other day when they were asking about I think it was Tom Brady that actually asked him about, and he said, you know, he's the GOAT, but why don't we just re-sign Ryan Tannehill? So that's another guy whose stock went way up that I, you know, had to completely flip
yeah.
on that was going to be available.
Oh, I love that story.
So,
I love the Ryan Tannehill story.
Yeah.
Yep.
So the quarterback, I think the quarterback part is just going to be absolutely fascinating. And I know you followed up the second half of that question of where do they land, and your guess is as good as mine on that.
Well,
so,
yeah. You know. Well, I mean, you got the Chargers, right? I mean, clearly they're going to need somebody. And then you got a question mark over in – I mean, you named Winston, so you got a question mark over in Tampa Bay for sure. And then there's a couple other, you know, places where it's just unclear what they're planning on doing. So, you know, there are some possibilities. But there's not as many free agent spots that I recall. Like Indianapolis is one of them. It's just not as many openings as I thought there would be. That's the kind of funny thing about this is that there are a lot of possible free agent quarterbacks out there, and Marcus Mariota is another one that you didn't mention, which is interesting because remember the time where Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota were 1-2 overall, and now it's like they're in free agency, and you're like, who wants them? I don't know. It's unclear. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how that all shakes out. I agree with you. I'm going to throw out a couple more mundane names out there that I'm keeping an eye on. That I think are kind of interesting. One of which is Breshad Perriman. He is fascinating to me because he just seemed like hands of stone when he came into the league. I mean, there was high hopes that he was going to convert into a good target and ended up being just terrible in the Ravens. And now he's really breaking out. I mean, it's small sample size, 5 games really on Tampa Bay, but he was amazing finishing up that year. I mean, part of it is that Winston just flings it 50 times a game. But, you know, think of it this way. Last 5 games, he had 5 touchdowns. And he was averaging almost 100 yards per game. And he was averaging a little bit under 20 yards per catch. And he was, you know, I mean, he was really trending up. I mean, he was at the point where he was averaging almost 7-8 targets a game. So, you know, I don't know what that means. I don't know if that means that if you throw enough balls at Breshad Perriman, he's going to catch a couple and make some plays, or if that means he's going to be something. But he's a free agent, and there are a lot of people that are looking for wide receiver help, so I'd be interested to see what happens to him. And then I'm going to get super mundane. I'm going to talk about the offensive linemen that are in free agency that I think are really, really big. And one of them actually comes from New England, Joe Thuney. I think that's an interesting one right there. I mean, he's definitely one of the best, most versatile offensive linemen in the open market, at least this offseason. He's been a great pass blocker. And I don't know if you feel differently because you obviously watch it closer than I do. But I think he's been a really good pass blocker and a true Iron Man. He's a continuous starter. I don't think he misses many snaps for the Patriots during his 4 seasons as a starter. So I really, really like him. And then I like Anthony Costanzo, the tackle from Indianapolis. I mean, he's also he came into the league as a first-round pick in 2011 and has been also very solid, started 132 career games, played 100% of the snaps in 2019. I mean, it's a possibility he hangs it up, but I think he's probably one of the best free agent tackles available. And then Brandon Scherff from Washington, I mean, you know, who knows what's going to happen there. Washington can't really afford to lose anymore in the offensive line, but you know, he did have a bunch of injuries, and that could have been that was a problem for him. But if he didn't have injuries, he could be one of the best offensive linemen on the free agent list. And it'll be interesting to see what happens there. He was a former number 5 overall pick in 2015, 3-time Pro Bowler, definitely one of the best run-blocking guards in the league. So I love all those guys as well. And I'm fascinated by this because, you know, a lot, as I was saying, there's not a lot of landing spots for quarterbacks right now, and there's not, and I think a lot of offensive backfields are relatively set. It's that line, you know, there's a lot of offensive line needs, so I can see these guys making a difference. I mean, what do you think about that? I mean, particularly about Joe Thuney, because I know you watch the Patriots obviously closer than I do. Any thoughts on any of those guys?
Yeah, I think Thuney is a great one of the, I mean, in a rough year on the offensive line for the Patriots, he was consistently the best offensive lineman they had last year. Shaq Mason was hampered by an injury most of the year. David Andrews obviously went out with a blood clot, so they had to kick Ted Karras in the middle. The right tackle, Marcus Cannon, who seems to have a good year and followed by a bad year, is one of these. They'll make a dated reference here. He's very much like Derek Lowe used to be as a starting pitcher, where he'd be fantastic 1 year, crash down to earth the next year. That's the story of Marcus Cannon. Usually you saw that, and then Isaiah Wynn saga on the left side. So Thuney was about the only stable force on that offensive line, and I think he's honestly one of the best guards in football. It's interesting because you would say, well, if the Patriots offensive line is struggling, why would they let that guy go? They're paying Shaq Mason a lot of money, and I hope they retain him, and maybe they restructure Mason's contract, but Belichick, you know, doesn't tend to want to spend big money on two guards at the same time. So that would be surprising. So I wouldn't be surprised if he does not return to New England and he is a net benefit wherever he goes. Costanzo, just the interest of being fair and transparent. I was probably around the Gregson era when we were mocking Gregson routinely on this podcast. But Costanzo was a guy that I think me and you both categorized at one point as soft and overrated. And I would say over the last 4 or 5 years, he has completely flipped that script and become one of the best left tackles in football. So I thought early in his career that I didn't see why they spent the high draft pick on him. Was not impressed with his play. Thought he was a better run blocker than a pass blocker at that time. And that has completely changed. So if he stays in the league in 9 years at left tackle, depending on the shape of the body, can be a daunting task. But he's a guy who I would assume has another several good years left, and left tackles always have a market. So I agree. I think that there's a lot of there's not a ton of movement going to be at the wide receiver position. And while there's a decent amount of good quarterbacks out there, there's not a ton of
landing spots.
Landing spots. So I think that the big shakeup and, you know, probably a lot of money on the offensive side will be spent on offensive linemen.
Yeah. Particularly with all the rookie quarterbacks out there. I mean, not rookie, but like I should say young quarterbacks out there. I'm sure a lot of teams are going to be looking to see how can they shore that up and make sure they can protect their investment into the future. All right. Well, some good ones there and free agency to look at. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how that shakes out as we go along. So let's go ahead and ring the bell on that. Let's get to our next topic, and that is the NFL draft. So last week we discussed the upcoming NFL scouting combine, and this week we're turning to the 2020 NFL draft, which is coming up April 23rd to 25th in Las Vegas, which should be a blast. I'm really this close to pulling the trigger and just going out there for that, because I can imagine that's going to be a heck of a lot of fun. Hey, you know what? I just thought of something, Ryan. I just realized that I think I figured out why you haven't been on the show a lot lately. It's because you don't like special guests. That's got to be it, because I just realized you missed last week of Adam from the Burgundy and Gold, and then you missed about 4 weeks ago with Wole and Ray from the urban sports scene, and then about 6 weeks ago you missed it with Dan and Chris from the Beer-Fueled Fantasy podcast. So clearly you just don't like to share the mic with guests from other shows. Am I right? Is that what's going on here?
Yeah. It's either that or you just
not enough room for two egos.
No, I think you just keep booking guests on weeks where I'm especially busy. So I put that on the show producer, which is you. So you know, if you could go ahead and clean that up and start running these guests through my personal assistant.
That's fair.
You could go ahead and hire me a personal assistant first, and then run everything through that person. That'd be wonderful.
That is fair. That is fair. All right, let's go ahead and let's turn to the draft here. So, Ryan, let's talk about the offensive prospects who you're most interested in the upcoming NFL draft and why.
Yes, I glanced over your list earlier, so forgive me if one of these three guys is on there.
Yeah,
I think my other two were safe, but I couldn't remember these three. But I'm going to cheat and package three into one here because I just think that this is an interesting dynamic between the three. So there's, you know, it's a big receiver class this year.
Yep.
Really big at that. They're really strong at that position. Three names that immediately come to mind are CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy, and T. Higgins. Lamb, obviously, of Oklahoma, Jerry Jeudy of Alabama, and T. Higgins from Clemson. So in looking at that, you know, I'll tell you that through watching a lot of film over the last year, Jerry Jeudy might be one of the purest and best route runners I've ever seen. And so there's a lot to like on his tape there. CeeDee Lamb is just an explosive downfield playmaker who's a lot of fun to watch. But those two are a little bit smaller than I tend to like my receivers, as has been well established on this show, which is why the 6'4", 215-pound T. Higgins is somebody that I'm very excited to see. You know, I was looking at CBS Sports right now, prospect rankings. They have him all the way down at 23rd. The other two are in the top 15, I believe. So, and they actually have Lamb ranked above Jeudy, which, depending where you look, could be flipped. So that's the way they have them. But I just think it's going to be interesting. It's not something in the short term we'll have an answer on. I'll be watching them, obviously, through the combine, see how they perform, see how the draft stock heats up. But, you know, we could be in a situation where, although I'd say, while they're all still there, that the shine wore off a little bit of the 2014 draft class. It looked really great that first year, and then it's not looked as explosive since, but it could be similar to that kind of a draft class where you just see a lot of big-name receivers going and finding a place to play to start. So that was my first group of guys that I was thinking of today.
Yep, yep. And let me throw in one more to that group of wide receivers. And if anybody's been listening, they know that I have a particular man crush on Laviska Shenault. From Colorado, 6'2", 220 pounds, amazing top-end speed. He's running 5'3", 5'4", he's out of high school. He is he's big time. I think he's somebody who can really shine out there. The one issue, and I mentioned this last week, was his route running. It could use a little bit of polish. He also has a nagging groin injury right now, so it's unclear. The report is that it's not too serious. He might even run the routes at the combine. So I hope to see that because that can only help him. But just from a pure physical attribute perspective, I think he's one of the best available. In fact, you know, and I'll throw this little mini stat in there. You know, he had the most forced missed tackles over the last 2 years of any wide receiver in the draft. And this year, it's 46 total. CeeDee Lamb is second with 39. And obviously, he's probably a top 10 pick this year. So I think that Shenault has a chance here. And it's miraculous to me. But you think about it, if you watch him play, he's kind of like a big-bodied, fast receiver, but also a really big running back. And he kind of runs a little bit like Marshawn Lynch at times. I mean, listen to this line. I mean, in 2018, 1,011 receiving yards, 6 receiving touchdowns, 115 rushing yards, 5 rushing touchdowns. I mean, that's a weird line. And then in his last year, a little more rushing, a little less passing, a little less receiving, 764 and 4 touchdowns, 161 and 2 touchdowns. So not as impressive, but I think there's a lot of potential there for him. And he could probably gotten late in the first, early in the second. So I like him a lot. So who's your second grouping? You said you had another grouping of guys you're looking at?
Yeah, so these two aren't as much of a grouping, but the other two guys I had to mention. First one is one I'm particularly interested in. Well, to be honest, both guys that I'm interested in because of local ties for me. So the first one is Jake Fromm. This is a guy whose shine definitely came off in last season. You know, I think primarily because of losing big games and the fact that his completion percentage sank all the way to sub 61%, which is not ideal, which is following a 67.3% completion percentage the year before. With that said, he threw for 2,860 yards last year. And when you look at his totals, and this is the thing that I like the most outside of his unbelievable rating, which was last year was his worst year and his rating was still a 141.2. But in his college career, he had 78 touchdowns to just 18 interceptions. Those are numbers I'll take all day. That's a guy who doesn't turn the ball over. Jim Nagy, who is whatever his exact title is, the executive president or president of operations, whatever. The guy who runs the Senior Bowl. said that he tweeted out earlier this week that he's been watching a lot of tape on Fromm, and Fromm is a guy that he's super impressed with and can't believe that his prospect has gone down so far. I'll be honest, I might have a personal bias towards him because I just really loved his character, meaning like the kind of person he is when watching QB1. I believe he was in the first season of that back in high school. I just think he's got good leadership qualities, has a good head on his shoulders, humble kind of guy. And, you know, so I'm big on Fromm. And the reason I said local ties there is because it is my hope that that is a succession plan, because he can be had in the third round right now. The CBS Sports app I was just looking at, or app, the CBS Sports list I was looking at, prospects have been ranked as the 93rd prospect.
Wow.
The Patriots have a lot of second and third round picks. So that is somebody I would like to see the Patriots go, especially if they bring back Brady, that Fromm is the guy that comes in and learns from for the next 2 years and is the eventual succession plan in New England. I think that's a guy with a lot of high-end talent that, like I said, the shine is off of him right now, but I don't think the talent got any worse, or that what we thought about him 2 years ago was incorrect. So Fromm is a guy that I'm very interested in. And then the other guy is twofold local. One, because I want him on the Patriots, and two, because of Randy Moss. Thaddeus Moss at LSU. Star in the making, I think. The other tight end that I love goes to the school that we both root for, and he was on your list, so I will leave him off and decide to go with Thaddeus instead. If either one of those guys ends up in a Patriot uniform as the final Gronk replacement, you know, I'll be happy as a Patriot fan. Thaddeus
love
just
it.
I mean, he's just such the opposite of his dad, right? He's bigger. He's not as explosive, but he's just unbelievable hands, great body control. I mean, you can go YouTube it quickly and find three or four clips of him just toe-tapping on the sideline, catching balls that, you know, that are thrown 5 yards out of bounds, and he's able to reach and keep the toes in there. And so
great body control.
I think he's great. Yeah, great body control, great hands. I like the fact that he's a legacy guy. You know, that just tells me he's someone who knows how to be there, or who's been there and knows how to raise him in the league. So I like all that. I like the story of, you know, the 2 years off, having to battle back and get on the field. And then to go do what he did this year for LSU was an unbelievable run for him. You know, I know Burrow gets all the hype, and rightfully so, but that was a fun run to watch for Thaddeus. He got the stats, so. Thaddeus Moss
totally
is the other guy I'm really interested in, and he's also, I think he's like in the 70s, so he's a guy who could go in the second, maybe early third round, or could slip, you know, even later third round.
Right. And the other guy you were talking about was Cole Kmet, tight end from Notre Dame. Obviously, the guy that I love as well, and I'll say I am biased. I do like tight ends out of Notre Dame, and they haven't been doing much recently, but I think Cole Kmet can really kind of change all that. 6'5", 250 pounds, runs really solid routes, good hands. Ranked second on the team in receptions with 43, receiving yards of 515, and receiving touchdowns with 6 this past season, even after missing the first 2 games with a broken collarbone. Tough guy. I just love everything about him, and I think he can be had much later in the draft. I think he'll be a good value tight end. I think he's being listed at around a prospect list around mid-50s and low 60s. So, you know, who knows where he might go. Maybe it's going to be the third round or something like that. But I like the fact that he can be a really good pass blocking as well as receiving tight end. Lots of great attributes there. Two guys I'll throw in really quick because I know we run out of time already, and they're both on the offensive line because I'm on my offensive line kick, and I know everybody is looking for this. Tristan Wirfs, the tackle and or guard from Iowa. I love his versatility. He basically was a starter since he was a true freshman. He was the Remington Pace Offensive Lineman of the Year in the Big Ten. He's big. He's powerful. He can play left tackle, right tackle. He can play guard. I mean, he basically can play anywhere you want. He's comfortable pass protection. He's passable in run blocking. He is an instant upgrade, definite early round one selection. Instant upgrade. I think he's a great pick for anybody who needs help along the offensive line. And then Mekhi Becton, who can be had later in the draft, probably late first round, maybe even early second round, depending on how things shake out. But he's also been incredibly solid. You know, he was recognized as one of the ACC's best pass blockers, although I think his strength lies in run blocking more so than pass blocking. He was all ACC. He captured a Jacobs Blocking Award, given to the conference's best blocker. He's done everything you want him to do, and I think he has also a great upside there. Out of Louisville, I like him as well. So, boy, oh, boy, we run out of time. There we are. So many prospects to cover. I blame the NFL for dropping that new news about the playoff for throwing us off our game, because we otherwise would have been right on target. But here we are, hitting the air, holding on the show. All right, Ryan, what do you have to promo for us? Anything? You want to promo anything from your other writing gigs?
Yeah, no, it's off season, so nothing right now.
Okay.
I do have a potential announcement going on Twitter about just another thing I'll be involved in, hopefully later tonight or tomorrow. So, follow me on Twitter at Ryan Whitfield NE for that. But I will say just quickly two things on your point. I have not got into offensive line scouting this early in the off season yet. But I will say, as a general rule of thumb, if they're from the Big Ten, they can come play for me. And then secondly, you can blame the NFL for dropping news. You wanted to talk about the XFL I think I've been on two podcasts in the last month that we talked to XFL both times. So you blame the NFL for putting it on you.
That is definitely on me. I will own that. I will own that, XFL. You've definitely done that to me. All right. Well, you can follow me at FB Garbage Time. And Ryan, you gave out your Twitter. Yeah. Everybody knows how to follow Ryan. Follow Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
Good follow, everybody. Everybody follow him. And you can follow me at FB Garbage Time. Thank you so much for wasting time with us. And until next time, enjoy your NFL. And dare I say XFL week? Or do I not? I don't know. We'll just go with NFL.
You did.
I did, right. I just don't really...